In this episode, Ken Schumann and a group of faith walkers reflect on the topic of arrogance. This conversation was originally recorded in January of 2021. We want to remind you that Faith Walking's mission is to make wholeness possible for individuals, communities, and the world. Visit us at www.faithwalking.us. Join this conversation.
Today we are looking at the phrase, love does not boast and is not arrogant. And it was interesting because it uses both two different words in that. I'm not going to give you the two Greek words. I've written them in the paper, but I love some of the vernacular common language that's used. Love does not vaunt, whatever that means. It doesn't brag or boast. It doesn't call attention to itself. And then this was my favorite. Love is not a windbag. Whatever windbag conjures up for you as an image, love is not that. And then the second word it literally is translated to puff up. And that word is Paul is the only New Testament author that uses that word. And if you remember, there's a verse in 1 Corinthians 8, verse 1 that says knowledge puffs up and love builds up, which is just a great reflection on, okay, so when I'm loving people, I'm not puffed up by what I know, or I'm not puffed up by what I think I know. And then in 1 Corinthians 4, verses 6 through 8, that word puffed up is connected to being loyal to a particular leader so much so that you're blind to whatever he or she does. Love refuses blind allegiance to any person or a group. And it was connected with the word partisan. So love is not partisan. Love is, and this is my take on it. Love is not unreasoning nor unreasonable. Love stays humble and teachable and holds things loosely. So for me, love is not wishy-washy. Love is willing to take a stand, but even when it takes a stand, it isn't closed-minded. And in Richardson's material, he talks about becoming less reactive and less polarized. And so for me, my mind kind of went in that direction because those are kind of faith walking things. And so I wrote in the paper here, love refuses to polarize and love refuses to herd, H-E-R-D. So within faith walking, within systems thinking, there's this concept that's referred to in several ways, but it's referred to as regressive society. And the idea is that when the anxiety in a society or a culture gets elevated, so in other words, when the whole community, when everybody's anxious, that our capacity to behave in emotionally mature ways decreases. And there are some things. So there's more reactivity when the anxiety is high. And one of the things we do to manage our anxiety when within a culture and society anxiety gets high is we herd into groups. Maybe even groups where we don't even believe everything everybody in the group believes, but it feels safer to be in a group. And so we give up some of who we are in order to feel the safety of the group. And then the group becomes puffed up because the group says, hey, we've got it right. We've got all the answers. We know everything. And so this idea of connecting being puffed up with, okay, I don't herd into a group. I keep my thinking about me. I keep my wits about me. I don't sell out to be with any one group. I keep thinking my way through, because that's what love looks like. And so then if you put these two words together, I love what it where it goes. Love is not a puffed up windbag. And I don't know about you, and I know I'm horrible, but instantly, and I'm not talking about any person that isn't currently in office. I'm talking about a politician's face just jumped into my mind when I thought about a puffed up windbag. And so I don't want to be that. And so it's this combination of, I take a stand for what I believe, but I don't do it in an arrogant, fist in your face kind of way, if that makes sense. And that seems to be the connotation behind these two words. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. Love's not a puffed up windbag. So I covered a lot of ground right there in just a few minutes. What would you like to talk about related to that? What gets stirred up for you?
Hey, Ken, did you head back into your poker group ever?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the last time you said checked out? And so what became of that?
Yeah. What became of it? I went back. I'm sure I went back before the end of the evening was over. I went back, but the two people that jumped me, kind of attacked me, have not come back. So I'm back with all the other crew. Those two haven't. One of them, I haven't done this with both of them because I'm just not ready to. But with one of them, I sent him an email and I said to him, listen, it's obvious that you and I disagree politically, and I want you to know I welcome you at my table anytime. I'm happy for you to come play, but here's what I'm going to ask you to do: not bring up politics anymore. And he sent me an email back and said, yeah, that's great. And sent me his phone number. I don't know why, but he sent me his phone number, but I haven't seen him since then. So yeah, that's what I've done so far. And that's where that is thus far. Did you, anything more you want to know, Jerry? I'm happy for you to ask further.
No, I was just curious as to, because you talked us through that, you know, the encounter.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty in detail, and I was just how you've kind of found your way through that.
Mm-hmm.
And also just, you know, the knowing that God always desires reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
To how mm-hmm. that all came about.
Yeah, and I'm open to that, but it hasn't happened yet. And the other thing that I did is I thought through more clearly, okay, the next time something like that happens, how do I want to show up? And I want to lean into that as best I can. But here's the deal, ladies, I hate to tell you this, I'm imperfect, and I can only do what I can do today. And that's where I'm at with that deal, okay?
Ken, I was, as I'm reading through this and hearing you, my mind is having to fight the immature first response and use this list and this talk as a recipe for judging instead mm-hmm. of seeing it as a litmus for self-evaluation.
Yeah, yeah.
I can be critical with myself, but I'm not supposed to take this and use it as a recipe for judging other people.
Yeah, Tammy. And I mean, I think it's natural that that's where our minds go first. I mean, that's where my mind went first. Okay, I'm going to judge those that, you know, are puffed up windbags, in my opinion. But it's the reason that I attached the little politics and polarization piece. What I deeply believe is we, right here, we can change the world. But we have to know how to change the world. So love is not just, oh, I just go and give up myself everywhere. No, I believe love, Jesus took a stand. But he didn't do it in a way that was puffed up and full of wind, right? And so this idea of, I want to learn to become less reactive in life to what everybody else is doing. And I want to be less polarized. And by polarized, for me, polarization is when I hate the other group so much that they become the devil and they become the enemy and they become the ungodly, ignorant ones. And my group are the intelligent and godly ones. And to me, that's what polarization is. So I can believe a group is wrong. I can believe I don't think you stand on good principles. I can believe you don't align with what I believe the way of Jesus is. I can believe all of those things and still not polarize that group. And so for me, that's the challenge that I try to do, Tammy, as far as my personal application. And I want to help people be able to do that. Because what I'm convinced of is at its heart, most of us, I don't believe, are extremist. I think most of us want to say, well, let's find a way to work this out where people with differing views can come together and figure out how to make the world a better place. I want to be that. And I guess what I wrestle with, so my tendency in my own emotional immaturity is to not say anything and to give up self and just kind of hide away. And I don't want to do that, but I also then don't want to turn into this loud, boisterous bully that thinks everybody is horrible. I don't want to go there either. And I want to find that third way that for me is the way of love. And it's combining this idea, I can be loving and also not give up self, not give up what I believe and what I stand for and those kinds of things. And I'm trying to find that place. And it's obvious because I'm talking so much that, you know, I don't know how to do that quite yet. Dawn.
We touched on this, I think, a couple of weeks ago, but this is really, I think, where we are right now, at least in the United States, with our political issues. And seemingly things are sort of smoothing out. But I think that feeling of separateness is still there. And I don't know how long it will be there. I just had a conversation with my 17-year-old daughter not too long ago about not just putting people into groups and not, and still keeping that dialogue going instead of saying, you know, this is your group and I don't want anything to do with you. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to hear what you have to say. You are wrong. And that's all there is to it. And we're done. And my comment that in both of those groups, the overwhelming majority of people have good hearts and they really do want to get along with one another. But somehow we are just all still struggling with how to do that.
Yeah.
But I know the first step is that we have to talk to each other and we have to respect each other and love each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't do that when we get arrogant. We don't do that when we think, oh, my group's got all the answers. That's what I believe anyway. Yeah. Helpful.
Don, I was curious, where are you located?
Yeah, I'm in Illinois, okay. About 100 miles west of Chicago in a small town.
Because your comment about things are smoothing out, I'm like, holy moly, no, there, at least for me, in my, where I am, it is not. It's almost escalated. I'm in Texas.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I don't know if I mean smoothing out. I mean, it feels like, I guess we've all sort of just said like, okay, take a deep breath. You know, we're not in a crisis, but I don't mean smoothed out as like, we've all come back together and we're, I don't mean it like that.
That's encouraging that at least the feeling is happening somewhere. Because I've been today, especially wrestling with that immature part, because I left a group chat yesterday because I had it being, anyway, yeah, at least in my sphere, I'm not seeing progressive unity. I'm seeing more inflammatory language, and civil war is coming up way too much, at least in my sphere, for me to be comfortable. Anyway, I'm thankful for this group and this lesson.
Well, why don't we divide into our small groups and discuss this a bit and then come back? Why don't we, you think 20 minutes is enough? Let's go to 11:20 and then come back for a little wrap up, if that sounds all right to everybody. What'd you learn?
Ken, we're all fixed. We're all done.
I am so happy, Kimberly. Excellent. Whatever, was it a pill or did you lay hands on people? How did that work?
It was refocusing on Jesus, mm-hmm. asking him to guide us.
Yeah.
Our example.
Yeah. Good. That you were right. You were right. In one of my faith walking groups last night, it was a missional group. One of the participants made this quote, the means have to mirror the heart of Jesus. Whatever the means are, they have to mirror the heart of Jesus. I thought that was good. The other thing in this particular conversation that has been helpful for me, that I thought about while y'all were doing your thing, had a vow that I'm trying to break, and my vow was I must be right, and I must prove that I'm right. Because again, it goes back to my relationship with my father, as most all of my vows do. And I didn't have a voice with my father. And there were times when I was right, and he wouldn't even let me prove that he was wrong, you know, because, oh no, you don't get a voice. And so I've got this thing in me that gets triggered around, I've got to prove I'm right. And that's not helpful. It's just not helpful. So I just want to acknowledge that sometimes for me, my vows get in the way.
Yeah. And Ken, I would say, I referenced my conversation with my 17-year-old earlier, that at some point, I also have to say my love for this person, my care for this person, my relationship with this person is more important than me making sure they know that I'm right.
Mm-hmm. But boy, that's hard to do when I'm in the middle of trying to prove I'm right.
Yeah.
Because then it just becomes about, okay, I've got to win this argument. Yeah, I'm with you. I think all of us are acknowledging this is challenging, and it's hard, and it's especially challenging and hard, particularly for us here in the States, because we really are deeply divided right now. And so I think what I want to say is, can we just make some baby steps? You know, can we, okay, we're not going to be able to make a major jump. I don't think you might, I can't ever, but can we make some baby steps? Can we move in that direction? Can we, can we be a little less reactive? Can we be a little less polarizing and practice our way into maybe a more mature way? And maybe in doing that, we will lead. And I realize if you're like me, I say, well, who am I to lead? I don't even like using that language, but you know what? We could lead because nobody else is leading. Why shouldn't it be us? Deb?
I have a quick question. Yeah, I had, and thinking about how to lead, I'm still pondering on how to respond to somebody. This has been like 12 days, I think. When I posted after or during Biden's inauguration, just how lovely it was, how my heart was free. And those who wanted to join in that party responded. And about 3 or 4 days later, a family member responded a negative thing. I could cry. Oh, because I said I could cry with how beautiful this is. And he said, I could cry for what's happened because even though Trump was horrible, I agreed with the direction he was taking the country. And I couldn't disagree more vehemently. But mm-hmm. I'm still pondering because the person never responds to anything I post, ever. And he chose that thing
mm-hmm.
to ruin the party, you know, kind of just to step into the party and ruin it. And mm-hmm. so I'm just like, what do I do about that? I haven't responded yet. Do I leave it? Or do I respond like, I understand how you're feeling and you're free to post that on your own page? This particular mm-hmm. post was just a party for those of us who feel mm-hmm. happy. I don't know what to do
mm-hmm.
to be an example in that. Because I'd like to, as you say, Ken, I'd like to lead with grace.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm just kind of like the deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
Don't know what to say.
The one thing, and I knew this was going to be my answer before, as when you said I have a question, I almost just said, well, let me just answer it now. I don't know.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks.
This is the thing I'm working on, Deborah, that I think may apply to that, is this little phrase. I am consistently trying to simply define myself rather than defending myself. Mm. And it applies to my Facebook posts. I'm just defining. This is what I think and this is what I believe. And I've made it a disciplined habit. I do not reply to my own posts. I don't care what anybody says. Okay. Because all I'm doing is, this is me defining myself. So if people react to that, I don't need to defend it.
What about those who kind of respond in kind to what you post? Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, I really enjoy this too. Do you respond to those? Or no?
I don't know. I don't remember. Usually I don't get a lot of attack on my Facebook page. I don't know why, but I have in the past and I've just chosen, okay, I'm not going to reply to that at all. And I don't respond much to anybody, I don't think, as I think about it, but mainly the main idea is for me, I'm learning to have the courage to define myself out loud. Yeah. And that's what it's about. I'm trying to learn to have the courage to define yourself out loud. And then don't worry about defending. And that's just the goal I have. And anyway, that's the best I've got today.
That's pretty good.
I wonder, Deborah, like, mm-hmm. I mean, I think it depends. I have no. It depends on the relationship you have with your family member and
brother-in-law,
your brother. Okay, and like where close. And where you are, and kind of how. Maybe another suggestion would be, either saying, hey, I just sent you an instant message, check your messenger, you know, like response, and then kind of, you know, maybe having a sidebar conversation related to it. If may, like, you know, I just don't, like, as far as like, I guess it kind of depends on maybe where you are and wanting to sort of clear the air with your family member and wanting to sort of keep control of comments, you know, and where you've kind of defined yourself in regards to Facebook, would be my suggestion. Or just, I don't, just a thought that I've been thinking, because I had someone instant message me about the fact that one of my comments was hate filled. And like, I was the furthest thing from my brain to think about the fact that my comment was hateful. I had written on my birthday on Instagram, like on a story, I got an impeachment for my birthday. Hooray, what a present. And and someone responded to me that it was nothing but hate that I was spewing. And I was like, it never even occurred to me, you know, that was hateful. And it sent me into a spiral, honestly, because I was like, that wasn't what I was intending. Like, I have no desire to spread hate. Is that what my messages are conveying? You know, I honestly haven't responded to her, but that kind of triggered maybe having a side conversation, maybe, you know, not needing to put it in the public space, but put it privately could be an option.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm toying with that too. Maybe that's why I haven't written yet. Thanks for that, for both of y'all. Thank you.
Maria?
So what keeps coming up for me is I'm seeing in myself, how much of it is that I want to be understood and not misunderstood more than being right? I just want to be understood. And I think the other person does too. I think it's understanding. And then it keeps coming to me. Did Jesus, and this is a question to all of you, did Jesus ever defend himself? I'm trying to think of if he never had to defend himself, did he? I mean, if we're truly at peace, we wouldn't need to defend ourselves no matter what's said, right?
I think that is true, Maria. I mean, I have looked. I don't think Jesus ever did defend himself, that he consistently defined himself. And he took a stand at pretty strong stands,
yeah,
right?
Humility, and that perfect balance of humility and confidence.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't defend himself, but he defended his father's house and his father. You brood of vipers, right?
Right.
The religious
right.
people and the overturning of the he struck out against injustice, but it was never against his personhood, against himself. That's a really great point.
Yeah.
He did not defend who he was.
Mm-hmm.
That's an awesome point.
Mm-hmm. I saw another hand. Trisha.
But I agree. I don't think he defended himself, but he did have teaching moments where he used parables. And that's way different than defending yourself. That's a teaching moment and an opportunity to rethink. And that would be very nice if people would do that instead of attacking you, Deborah, or whatever. Just say, well, here's a story at this grocery store. And then we can all draw our own inferences from it. But I think the teaching moments, they were not of defense. They were of love for the other person's heart, to give them another opportunity to see the world a different way. So I don't see it as a defense. I see it as an act of love. That's all.
Yeah, Dawn.
That's awesome, Trish. Deborah, I was just going to say another analogy that came up in a conversation for me this last week was just that social media is an insulator for us. And so the analogy that we were drawing was if you are out driving in your car and another person in another car says, you know, or does something that you don't like, you might say something about them or, you know, you see people gesturing in not nice ways and that kind of thing. The same would not be true, however, if we were all riding our bicycles or if we were walking and we met each other and somebody accidentally cut somebody off. You would not respond that way because you don't have the protection of your car. And I don't mean a physical protection. I mean, like, somehow we think that distances us enough and that person becomes a sort of not person. And so we feel like we're justified in our response because we are distanced enough that we don't feel that connection personally. And so I think that, you know, that's my issue with social media. It's just not a place to be, you know, making attacks. It's not a place to, I think, just picking up the phone, or, you know, I think it needs to be a more personal conversation, because it's just too easy to keep throwing, you know, lobbing things at each other and not feel like it's really dividing us when those things happen.
Group, I'm going to have to draw a line in the sand, unfortunately. I have another group meeting here in 10 minutes, and I need to have a little quick conversation between now and then. So this was really good. Thank you all. Keep pondering. If you come up with new stuff, let us know. And as usual, I will see you on next Friday. And unless you're in a group, that's I'll see you sooner. And if so, I'll look forward to it.
For more information about faith walking, visit www.faithwalking.us. We want to remind you that faith walking exists because of your financial support. Please consider giving at faithwalking.us/donate. Thank you for listening.